Live from the Polite Show, yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor, 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to another week and a Monday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of the great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, SiriusXM, Channel 375, the free Odyssey app, and of course, streaming on YouTube. 888-710-4ISN. That's 888-710-4476 is the number to jump on board. You could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Bruce Pearl is off to another Final Four. He's going to join us on the show an hour 20 from now at 4:20 p.m. Eastern, 1:20 p.m. Pacific today. Just punched his ticket to the Final Four yesterday after defeating Tom Izzo and Michigan State. Now he'll be jumping up on the show with us coming up in an hour 20 from now. And then John Fanta, who I think is like the voice of March Madness right now, with how many reports he does and how many interviews, and, you know, he talks to everyone. He's going to stop by at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific time. So we'll talk to Fanta, we'll talk to Bruce Pearl today, and we'll always talk to you, however you may consume us, on this Monday edition of the Zach Gelb Show. All righty. Let's do this right out of the gate. All four number one seeds have made it to the NCAA tournament Final Four for the first time since 2008. Let's kind of recap the games from over the weekend right out of the gate, and then I'll give you a thought or two on the Final Four that's going to commence in San Antonio on Saturday. We are, by the way, as a show, we're going to be off on Wednesday. Andy Gresh is going to be filling in because we're using it as a travel day because the flight times are very inconvenient for our show. So we're going out to the Final Four on Wednesday. We'll be doing two live shows there Thursday and Friday as the Final Four is set. As you will see Auburn go up against Florida in the SEC showdown, and then you will see Houston up against Duke. The Florida-Texas Tech game on Saturday was the wow game because Texas Tech looked like they were going to be on their way to the Final Four. They had that crazy game up against Ole Miss, and then you follow it up with this contest up against Florida, and I'm watching that contest and that game, and I'm sitting there, and I'm saying, oh my goodness gracious. Texas Tech up against Arkansas was the crazy finish, not Ole Miss, I said. But anyway, Florida and Texas Tech, you're sitting there, and it's a nine-point game with a little over 3:15 to go. And Florida was supposed to just walk through the park and beat up on Texas Tech. And they're sitting there down nine with about 3:15 to go. And let me tell you, I don't think he's the best player in the NCAA tournament because the best player to me is Cooper Flagg, but the most entertaining player in the NCAA tournament, the most jaw-dropping player in the NCAA tournament is Walter Clayton Jr. What he has been able to do and what Florida has done from the SEC tournament and on, and I know they've only lost four games this season, but it reminds me a lot like Steph Curry, if I'm just being honest. Now, when Steph Curry played in college, he was at Davidson, right? He wasn't at a school with the brand recognition and the name recognition of Florida. But the other night, where you see Walter Clayton Jr. right at the rim, and then he doesn't go up with it, he dribbles it out and hits that sensational three. That was a Steph Curry, wow, 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 just like unbelievable video game type of moment. And it was pretty sensational and pretty surreal to see. So, yes, we all know Cooper Flagg is going to be the number one overall pick in the draft. We all know pound for pound, he is the preeminent player in the NCAA tournament. But what Walter Clayton Jr. has done in this tourney, I think he's the most exciting player to watch. Like, if you say to me, Zach, you only get to watch one player in the NCAA tournament. Even though Cooper Flagg is better, I'm preferring to watch Walter Clayton Jr., especially with those video game, jaw-dropping type of threes that he hits. So Florida, they find a way to survive and advance. I'll tell you, that's not twice Florida. If you look at their run and what they've done in this NCAA tournament, they probably should have lost that UConn game, and they pulled the rabbit out of the hat in the final 3 minutes. And if we're being real, they probably should have lost up against Texas Tech, but then they pulled another rabbit out of the hat in the final 3 minutes as well. So Coach Golden, Walter Clayton Jr., they are off to the Final Four. Well, they go up against Auburn. We'll get to Auburn in just a second. But I'll tell you, the most disappointing thing of the weekend was Duke-Alabama. I thought for sure we were going to get a high-octane, offensive, explosive game where we were going to see both of these teams be well into the 80s, maybe even the 90s. And you saw what Alabama did in the game prior, where they eclipsed over the 100-point mark. We know Duke did as well. I thought Duke was going to win the game, but what I don't think Duke has got enough credit for nationally, because we all look at Duke, we talk about John Shire, we talk about Cooper Flagg, we talk about what their offense has been, and I said this before the NCAA tournament, not a hot take, I think it was a pretty obvious take, that Duke, if they were healthy, which it was evident that they were going to be healthy, 5 minutes into their first round of the NCAA tournament game up against 16 seed, where Cooper Flagg dunked and stuck the tongue out and kind of said to everybody he's back. But I think the underappreciated part about Duke is their defense, because Alabama was a juggernaut. Alabama was a well-oiled offensive machine. We know what Nate Oates' teams have been ever since he left Buffalo to go to Tuscaloosa and become the head basketball coach at Alabama. They were in the Final Four last year. They've had a marvelous run. But now that was a 20-point game, and you never really thought Alabama was in it, right? I was at a wedding on Saturday. I was like, oh, I have this wedding. You know, thankfully, it was actually in a casino, actually, in Atlantic City. Oh, the game's going to be on. There was no reason to walk away from the wedding and watch this game, because Duke issued a punch. And even at 46-37 at halftime, it didn't really feel like Alabama was going to go get in the game. And give credit to Duke's defense. And Duke is now two wins away from the John Shire era, where he won a national championship as a player at Duke, to then winning a national championship as a coach of Duke. But I thought that was going to be a Final Four type of field game in the Elite Eight. And it was a big nothing burger, because Duke is that much better than Alabama. And it's not like we're talking about South Harmon Institute of Technology, right? It's not as if we're talking about a 116 seed here. It's not as if we're talking about David versus Goliath. Alabama was one of the hottest teams in the country, and they play in the best conference for the year 2025 in college basketball in the SEC. And Duke said, thanks for showing up. Thanks for getting off the bus. Thanks for making the trip. We're going to spank you around the court, and you're just going to go home, and that's where your season's going to end. All right, and that's going to be it. But I was thoroughly disappointed that we did not get a classic, or did we not? We didn't get a game that at least the final 5 minutes it was worth watching between Duke and Alabama. So Duke off to the Final Four, where Duke will go up against Houston. That leads me to Houston. What a punch that was up against Tennessee. And, you know, I like Rick Barnes. Rick Barnes is a very good coach. He has not been to a Final Four since the early 2000s when he was at Texas. He has had a lot of good teams. He has done a good job at Tennessee. But you see the difference where Kelvin Sampson is at right now in his career trajectory and what he's been able to do at Houston compared to Rick Barnes at Tennessee, who's had a lot of good teams, a lot of good players. But you keep on getting so close, and you say to yourself, with him only getting older and older, you know, if not now, when? And for that game to not even be competitive, you look at Duke and Alabama, Houston and Tennessee. I thought both Duke and Houston were going to win, but severely disappointed with Tennessee and their lack of effort and just their lack of showing up in a game like that. Because when you get to halftime, honestly, you know, I know basketball games never over in the first 5 minutes. Because we've seen, right, even UNC when they played Ole Miss, it was a 22-point game. And UNC, they didn't win the game, but they almost won the game. They cut it down to two at one point. But 5 minutes into the game, when it's such a thought about a Rick Barnes team, where we all know the guy's a heck of a coach, but when you get close to the Final Four, he doesn't get there. When they come out with that lethargic of a performance, you almost felt as if the game was over in the first 5 minutes. And, you know, forget about the first 20 minutes. When it's 34-15, we've seen comebacks happen before. But when it's 34-15 at halftime, did anyone think Tennessee was coming on back? And Tennessee didn't play a poor game in the second half. They were dead even, both at 35 apiece. But that start just dug you into such a deep hole that there was no way Rick Barnes and Tennessee was going to prevail. But let's give a lot of credit to Kelvin Sampson. And you know what? I found the video. I put it out on my social media. So Temple in 2019, my alma mater, they beat Houston. And since then, I was heckling Kelvin Sampson at that game. You know, he took his tie off. He like collapsed on the court because he was so disgusted with the officiating. And I am three or four rows behind Kelvin Sampson, and I'm trying to get him a technical foul. I am heckling him. I am yelling at the ref, tee him up. Well, I did the number crunching. Since that video that I took in January 2019, Kelvin Sampson is 234. 200 wins, 34 losses at Houston with now two trips to the Final Four with the Cougars. Since that video, January of 2019. And he's one of the big storylines heading into this NCAA tournament and into this Final Four because he has another heck of a squad in Houston, another number one seed, and the only thing missing off of his resume is an NCAA championship. So what a job by Houston. And they came with an effort in the first 5 minutes where it's very tough to win a basketball game in the first 5 minutes. They knocked out Tennessee, though, in the first 5 minutes. And then get to Auburn and Michigan State. Auburn actually, to me, in a weird way, because they're a number one seed, it's tough to say they've been the most impressive team in the NCAA tournament, but from where they were heading into the NCAA tournament, where they lost three out of four, and I know that the SEC is a gauntlet, so it's not a shame to lose three out of four in the SEC towards the end of the season, but the way that they've played and how deep they are with Jahni Broome, Tahad Pettiford, Denver Jones, I know he hasn't been fully healthy, but Chad Baker Mazzara, that team is so well-rounded. And that team is unbelievable. And we'll talk to Bruce Pearl coming up in about an hour 10 from now. That game up against Creighton, I thought was enormous for them, going back to the round of 32. Because even though they were one of, if not the best teams in the country for the majority of the season, when you lose three out of four heading into the NCAA tournament, and then you beat a 16 seed in Alabama State, and you beat them like a drum, no one is going to praise you. But Creighton was a veteran team with Kalkbrenner, with Ashworth, and they just dominated that game. And over the weekend, even when Michigan went on a little bit of a run, I think they were up by nine, and it's like, oh, Auburn's in a little bit of trouble. Auburn just quickly came roaring back. And then the Tigers smothered the Wolverines down the stretch. And Tom Izzo, we all know, is a phenomenal coach. I picked Michigan State before the NCAA tournament to go to the Final Four. But going into that game, yeah, and I did so yesterday, and the bet just cleared at minus 5.5. I didn't think I was going to have to sweat it out, but I did at the end. I loved Auburn yesterday. I loved Auburn. And Jahni Broome gets hurt, right, dealing with ankle, shoulder stuff. He leaves the game. Did anyone think he was coming back? And even when he came back to the bench, I think they were going to put him back in, and then he gave the thumbs up, goes on out there and hits a three. And, right, he is, right, from Morehead State to now Auburn, a phenomenal basketball player. And outside of Cooper Flagg, I think he is the best player in the country with what he's been able to do. Now, Walter Clayton Jr. is the most entertaining, I would say. But those, to me, are the three signature players of this Final Four. Jahni Broome, Walter Clayton Jr., and then Cooper Flagg. So we have the Final Four is set. I'll give you my first two thoughts on it, a thought on each matchup. Let's start with Duke and Houston. The story for Houston is Kelvin Sampson and this unbelievable renaissance that he's had at Houston, this career-saving moment with the Cougars, the stability that he has brought to that program, and he's taken them to new heights when they were in the American and now being in the Big 12. You could put Kelvin Sampson anywhere, the guy coaches ass off. They, though, are fighting an uphill battle here up against Duke because Houston is a tremendous defensive team. But now they're going up against an offense in Duke that is unbelievable. And as we just saw what Duke just did to Alabama, yeah, that Duke defense isn't all that bad. And that Duke defense is really damn good. So I think Duke is just a much better version of Houston. And I believe that Duke's going to the national championship game. Until someone beats Duke, I'm picking them. I told you before the tourney, I'm picking them until someone takes them down. So you look at the Duke side of it, there's two storylines here at play. Number one, Cooper Flagg, the best player in the country. But then number two, I think we need to show appreciation for John Shire, right? Filling those shoes of Mike Krzyzewski is not easy. And I know that you have some bumpers at Duke, but ask Kyle Neptune if that worked at Villanova when he replaced Jay Wright. I know that Hubert Davis has been to a national championship game. Ask how he's feeling right now in replacing Roy Williams. Shire, who now has his moment, right? He has got to a Final Four. You still got to win a championship at Duke, if not multiple championships, right? When you're taking over Coach Krzyzewski. But what he's been able to do as a coach, I don't think we appreciate it enough because we just talk about Duke, and what Duke has been. And you think any dummy can get on the sideline and coach at Duke, which is not the case. So I think those are the two storylines there. Obviously, it's Cooper Flagg, but also it's John Shire. And anything short of winning a national championship this year for Duke is a disappointment. So I do like Duke coming up early in the week on Saturday night. Auburn and Florida, though. If this game doesn't live up to the hype, I'd be stunned. Now, I just thought Duke and Alabama was going to live up to the hype, and it did not. Didn't even come close to living up to the hype. But Auburn led by Bruce Pearl, you talk about the career renaissance for Kelvin Sampson in Houston, very similar what he's been able to do at Auburn, and you throw him in the SEC, and that conference just keeps on getting better and better. And then you go up against Florida with Coach Golden, who, by the way, was coached by Bruce Pearl in the 2009 Maccabi games. And when Bruce Pearl got to Auburn, he hired Golden, who was on the staff in some capacity at Columbia. And now they're going up against each other on Saturday night. The key to this one, especially with how Florida could shoot the basketball, Auburn's defense is really damn good. And Auburn's backcourt is phenomenal. And Denver Jones could be one of the best defensive players in the country. To see that defense up against Walter Clayton Jr., that's what gets me excited for this matchup on Saturday night. So players-wise in this tournament and what is remaining, you know, obviously you are looking at Cooper Flagg. You are looking at Walter Clayton Jr. Those are the two marquee players. Jani Broome, we know he's in the player of the year conversation as well. But coaching-wise, you know, I really think it's the renaissance stories of Pearl and then also Kelvin Sampson that stand out to me. And then the younger guard here on what Todd Golden has done at Florida and then John Shire maybe having his moment at Duke. But I can't wait for this Final Four. You know, remember after the opening round of Thursday, oh, this Final Four sucks, oh, it's terrible, blah, 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 blah. And I said, when you don't have these Cinderellas and when you get to the Sweet 16, you have one double-digit seed in the Sweet 16, and it was Coach Cal at Arkansas, right? I mean, that's not your stereotypical Cinderella. I thought we were going to get some great games. You've had some really good games, and now with four number one seeds remaining, the first time since 2008, let's buckle up and let's have a tremendous showdown in San Antonio for the Final Four. Auburn and Florida, I think, is going to be a magnificent game. I will never count out Kelvin Sampson in terms of giving it a game, but I would be very surprised if Duke isn't in the national championship game on Monday night. All right, if you want to react to the Elite Eight, Sweet 16 from over the weekend, leading us into the Final Four, which will be doing two shows from San Antonio on Thursday and Friday, 888-710-4ISN. That's 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. We'll take a break. Bruce Pearl going to join us coming up an hour from now at 4:20 p.m. Eastern. John Fanta at 5 p.m. Eastern. We'll continue to do a ton of college basketball today, but when we come on back, Sean McDermott, he sounds like a dope. Just talking, you know, in the last 24 hours at the owners' meetings about banning the tush push. And also, an 18-game season, I don't think it's a matter of if it's going to happen, just when are we good with potentially seeing 18 regular season games in the NFL. So we're chatting a little football next. Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network. All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. I always think that there's a time in life, right? Everyone has this moment where you have such energy about something. And eventually you realize, oh, you were got, and you're just wrong. And you have two things that you could do when you reach that dilemma. You could either just say, hey, I have a change of opinion, a change of heart. I got something wrong. Or you could do it a lot like what foolish people do. And that just double down on something. And then when you're wrong about it again, you triple down on it. And when you're wrong about it again, you quadruple down on it. where you just start to then say things and you know, right, that little voice in your head knows, hey, you're wrong. But you don't have the courage. You don't have the guts to say you're wrong. And then you have to speak on something and it's verbal diarrhea. Sean McDermott has now had that moment. He has been the most vocal, him and the Green Bay Packers, about banning the tush push. So I'm going to play you two cuts here. One is almost 2 minutes. And if you could sit here and listen through a minute and 40 seconds of Sean McDermott sounding like a buffoon trying to defend his take on banning the tush push, God bless you. Now, we're just playing it because I think it's so funny. Because does anyone understand what he's saying during this? And does anything he actually says make sense where you go, oh, I'm enlightened. Oh, the tush push needs to be banned. So here is Sean McDermott literally rambling, incoherent nonsense about the tush push.
Yeah, I mean, I feel, I think, similar to how I felt at the combine. I've dove deeper into more of the data on it and, just thought more about it as well. And my position hasn't really changed at all. I feel where I'm most concerned is, even though there's not significant data out there to this point, my biggest concern is the health and safety of the players, first and foremost.
What are you seeing with the health and safety of the players? Since, as you said, there is really no data to say there's injuries. Like, what are you seeing?
I think anytime you get in, it's two things. It's force, added force, number one, and then the posture of the players, being asked to execute that type of play, that's where my concern comes in.
There's no actual health and safety data showing that there's any problem with it after we've seen, over 300-something snaps, specifically in Philadelphia. Then how much more data do you need? Is it the hope that there's going to be injury that those would be opposed to it?
Well, number one, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to get too deep into that situation there in terms of how much data, how much sample. I don't think that's really always the best way to go. I think is when you're looking at, there's other data out there that suggests when you're in a posture like we're talking about, that can lead to serious injury. And I think being responsible and proactive in that regard is the right way to go.
Force and posture and data, right? That's what I just heard. Those three words. Force, posture, and data. Well, coach, don't you run the tush push a lot? So if you're so concerned about the force and posture of your players and the data, which there has never been an injury caused from the tush push, is so concerning to you that you think it needs to be banned, then why do you run it? Well, that's a good question. And I give credit to Elliot Shore Parks, who said pretty much that when talking to Coach Sean McDermott, where if you're so opposed to it, are you going to continue to run it if it's not banned?
If it remains and you have concerns about the safety, do you think you'll continue to run it? Because I think you ran it quite a bit last year.
A form of it. So I think that's it's a loose term, really, in terms of what defines a tush push. So there's different forms of it out there. I know we are one of the teams that people identify that run it. That's fair. There's other teams as well. So I just look. We're gonna always act in a way that's best for the health and safety of the players, and I think that's the responsible way to go.
Mr. McDermott, what you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I've ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul. That's what I would have said to Sean McDermott in that moment. He just sounds lost. Like, coach, you're sitting there freaking out about the data. You're sitting there, you're freaking out about your analytics and all this stuff and what it's telling you and all this. And when you go through everything that you're kind of deciphering through, you're not making, like, I don't even know what he's trying to say. So we think it's unsafe. our data tells us that, even though there's no injury, so what is the data? Oh, you don't know. It's like the more and more you go through this and the more and more you kind of figure out what's going on, it's almost that Sean McDermott just knows that he's got, right? And he's sitting there and he's trying to tell you, oh, okay, this is what's happening and this is why I'm against it. And it's, but you run it. It would almost be like if Sean McDermott was a parent and you tell your kid, hey, don't drink soda, right? Soda's bad for you. Soda's unhealthy for you. We don't want you drinking soda. This is what Sean McDermott's basically saying to his kid. But then he walks in with like a gallon of Diet Coke and a liter of Diet Coke. That's pretty much what he's doing right now. He's saying, oh, my data, what data? Because no one's got hurt from the tush push. And I'm all about the safety of the players and it's the force and the posture. And we run a version of it, but you run the tush push. All right? If it's that unsafe and if you're all about player safety, then why do you run it? And this is the bottom line. Sean McDermott just got. That's what it is. His energy has been so strong against the tush push, and then he's opened his mouth and it's been verbal diarrhea. He's not making any sense, but he feels like he has to defend his position and his initial argument. Just do us all a favor. You got this one wrong, Sean. And you look embarrassing when Diana says, like, the Eagles have run 300 plays of this. No one's got hurt. You know, what data are you talking about? What TikTok did you see, Sean McDermott, that was fake news that you think that this is such a dangerous play? It's just stupid. It's the definition of dumb from Sean McDermott, who's a good football coach. But, Sean, don't become a lawyer because your arguments are lousy. They stink. You are so against this, and you don't have a damn clue what you're talking about. Here is Brad Holmes, the Lions general manager on PFT Live with Mike Florio. He supports the tush push.
They came up with it, and they've been effective at it. And so if you don't like it, stop it. I mean, that's kind of our stance of it. Now, look, I know there's deeper conversations and with injuries and all that kind of stuff, but that's our stance on it. It's just they're really good at it, and you know there's other teams that have tried it that have not been as effective at it. It's part of their identity. They came up with it, so if you don't like it, then stop it.
Yeah, I think the Packers and the Bills are just coming off as insufferable whiners in this. I love what Brad Holmes just said, and that's my take on it. Now, let's get to player safety. Right? Because we go from one hypocrite in Sean McDermott to the next, the NFL. How much does the NFL just shove down your throat and always say, oh, we're all about player safety? They're selectively about player safety. The NFL is all about money. They're all about cash. And just when you think the NFL makes enough money, there's no such thing as enough money. So I know the NFL will probably tell you, oh, well, we're not adding an extra game. We're just going to trim away another preseason game and then we'll add a regular season game. But at these owner meetings, they are discussing the idea of adding an 18th game. Now, the CBA, the players have some leverage here. The CBA is not expired till 2031. And you know the NFL is going to want to implement this a little bit earlier. But we're at a point right now where I don't want to see the 18th game be added in the regular season. But I don't even know if I could devote so much energy to bitching and complaining about it because I know that this is just not going to be a fight I'm going to win. So is it even a fight that's worth fighting for? That's a question. But what I will say is growing up, right, Belichick would always kind of approach it this way, that the first 4 weeks of the regular season is an extension of the preseason. Now that's basically become, for most of these teams, the first 2 months is an extension of the preseason. Now those games still matter. And you could derail your season early on. Ask the Cincinnati Bengals what they did early on to start this season. But with how limited contact there is, with how there is barely anything that is allowed in the ramp up to the season, you're now going to take away another preseason game, which some of these preseason games are just irrelevant anyway now. And you're going to add in another regular season game. You know, when the football season ends, does anyone say, oh, we need to see another week of regular season games? I don't. And the product has become very sloppy. And I'm a huge football fan, but it's tough to watch in the first 2 months of the season. So do I think we need to add an extra regular season game? I don't. But the NFL, they're greedy pigs. That's what they are. I love the NFL. More than anybody, I think. But the NFL are a bunch of greedy pigs. So if they can make more money, they are going to do that. And they'll tell you, oh, we got to change the kickoff because of lack of, you know, because of player safety. But, oh, let's go add another regular season week to the season. It seems like it's nonsense. The NFL doesn't have to do it. But if there's a little opening for the NFL to make more money, they're going to go about doing that. All right, it is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We'll take a break. When we come on back, we'll update you some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. We'll get to a news brief next. Update time first here, Zach.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
All righty, it's time to ask the pros. Do you, the listeners, just get to ask us a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts? Simply tweet your question at INF Sports Center at Zach Gelby's and the hashtag Ask the Pros. Be listening later in the show. We might answer your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Hope everyone's seated nice and comfy for this edition of the news brief. Let's start it off with Tom Izzo. His team got to the Elite Eight. They did fall yesterday to Bruce Pearl and the Auburn Tigers. Head coach of the Auburn Tigers, Bruce Pearl, is going to join us coming up at 4:20 p.m. Eastern time today. Tom Izzo praised his Spartans team, though, for the run they had this season.
There's still people out there that care about winning and care about getting better and care about playing for the school they're at and care about playing with the players they're with. In this day and age when it's getting a little more selfish, that is rewarding. That is exciting. That is invigorating.
Talk about a coach that just continues to urinate on the transfer urinal, aka portal. Remember when we were debating if that was intentional or not, and we only heard the 20-second excerpt? Well, there was like 10 minutes of him just ranting, as if it was me talking about an NFL topic, Tom Izzo just ranting about the portal leading into what this weekend of games were for his basketball team. Here's Kelvin Sampson. His Houston Cougars are once again off to the Final Four. They were just dominant to start yesterday up against Tennessee. This is Kelvin Sampson and why his team has played so well.
Once you teach accountability, then the next stage, next phase of that is responsibility. And that's why our kids are, this is very much a player-led team. They're responsible for our success. And, you know, as a coach, that's the way I prefer it.
And let's go to Todd Golden. His squad was down 9 with a little over 3 minutes to go. It looked like they were going to get upset by Texas Tech. But then Todd Golden's squad came on back. Walter Clayton Jr. and company were sensational down the stretch once again, similar to the UConn game. Here is Todd Golden and his comeback win versus Texas Tech.
At the end of the day, you know, great teams are as good as their players lead them. And Walter's done a great job all year that way. Tommy's played his tail off for us across every game this season. And I'm really proud of these guys for the way they stepped up and made two big threes each down the stretch. I think we finished the game on a 17-4 run that allowed us to win and would not have happened without these guys next to me.
And let's go to Brian Callahan of the Tennessee Titans, their head football coach. How about your plans for the number one pick?
I would be wrong to say there's a leader in the clubhouse at this point. We're still going through all of the process. And we got meetings coming up still that we have to finish. When it comes to the Colorado players, both Travis and Shador, their pro day and then their private workout. So we're just looking for those guys to perform, and that's all we're looking for.
So there's four players in the conversation for the number one overall pick. I really think it's more so three, but since he mentioned Shador, I'll throw Shador in there. But I think the decision is, do you go Cam Ward at quarterback or do you take Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter? That, to me, one of those three players are going to be the number one overall pick. With how many holes Tennessee has and you're in the number one spot, and I do believe that they will go Cam Ward over Shador Sanders at the quarterback position, but we now have two people join this show and actually say they think Shador is a better fit for Brian Callahan than Cam Ward. Emery Hunt was someone that joined us that said that. And we also had someone reiterate that last week as well. I forget exactly who. But they were talking about the Joe Burrow type of comparison of the way that Shador plays to what made Brian Callahan become a head coach. I still think that it's going to be Brian Callahan and the Tennessee Titans taking Cam Ward. But do we disagree here? Stu, number one overall pick, do you still think Tennessee's going Cam Ward?
I still think it's Cam.
Samter?
Yep.
Okay, so we're all in agreement right there. All righty, let's get to Brian Callahan. Is Cam Ward being a little bit too cocky? Is that a problem?
Yeah, I like confidence. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's I think he's having a little fun. You can tell he's got that kind of personality. Those things don't bother me one bit. I like to see a little bit of confidence. I think that's a good thing. You know, when you're getting potentially being in the conversation for the number one pick, there's a lot that comes with that. A lot of expectation. There's a lot of pressure. And so to be able to have a little fun with that and have some confidence in the moment, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I have no problem with it. Same thing that I said about Shedeur Sanders, where people thought he was brash and arrogant. Oh, you know, give me a break, jeez. Here is Mike Tomlin on Aaron Rodgers.
He's a free agent. As you guys know, he came to visit last Friday. We had a really productive day. He's been in this thing a long time. I've been in this thing a long time. But it's no substitute for, you know, intimacy and spending time together and getting to know one another in a non-competitive environment. And so that was really good. But I don't have any new updates in terms of where the process is. We'll see where it leads us.
The process is they're waiting on Aaron to make a bleeping decision. And we continue to wait and wait and wait on Aaron Rodgers' watch. Let's go to Mike Tomlin and I having a starting quarterback right now for the Pittsburgh Steelers that we could all identify.
I'm really comfortable with being unsettled this time of year, to be quite honest with you. It's about talent acquisition. We got two main means of acquiring talent, free agency in the draft. We multitask. We do both those needs that we fulfill in free agency. We do so there, and when we don't, we fulfill it in the draft.
The problem is, are you going to be able to fulfill it in the draft? Because you're not picking high enough to get Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders. And the Steelers have kind of been in this irrelevant state at the quarterback position since Big Ben has left. You know, they tried it with Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, Duck Hodges even got his opportunity, Justin Fields, Russell Wilson. They haven't been able to get that quarterback. So maybe you're starting to get comfortable with the uncomfortable state that you've been in, but that's not a good thing. Because you got to find your next guy or else you're going to continue to be this franchise that is well-respected, that is good, but you're not going to get back to the Steeler way of winning a Super Bowl or winning Super Bowls if you don't have that franchise quarterback. So I don't think it's good that this time of the year the Steelers don't have a damn clue what they're doing at the quarterback position. Let's get to DeMeco Ryans on the report that his offensive room was toxic this past season.
I think our guys in that room, they competed. They battled. It didn't always go how we wanted it to go, but there was nothing toxic in the room. Those guys showed up to work every day. Those guys were a tight group. They went out to dinners throughout the week. So those, I don't know where their report came from, but it's very incorrect. That's nothing in our building. That's nothing I stand for, you know, as the head coach of the team.
Well, there's different levels of being toxic. Like, the Texans are nowhere close to being as toxic as they once were. You do have the belief in the foundation on both sides of the ball with DeMeco Ryans, with C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson being the main three pieces of this organization now. But Bobby Slowick was talked about as, like, this bright young offensive mind that was going to be a head coach in this league, and he got fired. He got fired. So there has to be some legitimacy to those claims and to some of those reports. Here is Mike McDaniel. He was asked if he's on the hot seat.
I think it's important for me to do my job the right way, that I never look at any sort of entitlement to having the job, because shame on me for everybody involved, and that I'm very comfortable in that. So every year, to me, if you're not feeling heat on the seat, you have the wrong urgency. It should be that way every year, because this is not my gift. You know, this is an incredible responsibility that, you know, I only sign up for because I think I'm the best person suited for it.
No, Andy. Like, what else is he supposed to say in a situation like that? He is on the hot seat. He's done a good job as a coach. He looked lost last year without Tua Tagovailoa. But your team went all in. Like, you guys got to start winning a playoff game. Yeah, make the playoffs, and you got to win a playoff game. And that's been a struggle for them through the years is, you know, they've been in the postseason, but they haven't been able to get the job done when it comes to the postseason. 2 years ago, got in. This past year, they did not. Let's get to Kim Mulkey, who I actually think could be the most intimidating person in sports. If I was a reporter and I had to ask Kim Mulkey a question, I would be very, very nervous to upset her. Well, here is a reporter talking to Kim Mulkey after her LSU Tigers did lose in the Elite Eight.
Coach, it's the second straight year you guys get eliminated in the Elite Eight. Just get... Yeah. Terrible.
How many Final Fours you play in?
None.
So it's probably pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
I don't really see what the problem was with the question. It's a fair question. Like, play that back for me one more time, Stu.
Coach, it's the second straight year you guys get eliminated in the Elite Eight.
Okay.
Just
fact.
Yeah. Is that terrible or is that good? Terrible.
How many Final Fours you play in?
None.
So it's probably pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's just a pissed off coach after losing. But Kim Mulkey, you know what the standard is, right? And it's a credit to your coaching career. Now, oh yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, it's good to get to Elite Eight, but when you get to Elite Eight, here's a hot take for you. You want to get to the Final Four. All righty, last one. Let's hear Mike Tomlin have a little fun at the expense of Mark Caboli.
Apparently, we have the same appetite for candy, me and DK. You hear about that?
No, I didn't.
Apparently, he eats 4 or 5 candy bars a day.
Really?
Not me. That's what he said on a podcast.
He wears it a little differently than you.
Now, I think there's going to be some people that are going to be like, oh, shame on Tomlin, fat shaming Caboli. He started it off. We have the same appetite and love for candy, myself and DK Metcalf. And DK Metcalf, it's crazy how players can eat that much candy and still look like how DK Metcalf does. And Tomlin, who has a relationship with Mark, says, oh, he wears it a little bit better than you do. It's a pretty funny line. But Caboli, he wasn't asleep. But it looks like he was sleeping in that round table, and everyone's roasting him today. One of the good guys, too, in the sports media business. All righty, we'll take a break. When we come on back, Aaron Rodgers or Kirk Cousins for the Steelers, Daniel Jones or Anthony Richardson for the Indianapolis Colts. Grab a chair, sit on down, have some fun. You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Bruce Pearl going to join us also 25 minutes from now.